Blog Talk Radio.
So you want your charity to succeed. It's no secret that combining online and offline techniques is the key to modern-day fundraising success, and practical advice is what you need. The Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart is the perfect place to learn from experts around the world who, along with our host, provide advice you can use. Ted Hart is without a doubt one of the foremost nonprofit thought leaders. Also a successful author, his books cover a broad range of topics from major gift fundraising to use of social media and how to succeed online. Ted lectures around the world, but now he's here for you. From the latest in charity news, technology, fundraising, and social networking, Ted and his guests help you maneuver through this economic downturn in the charitable sector to greater levels of efficiency and fundraising success. Remember, this is a live call-in show. Become part of the show by adding your voice. Call now at 347-324-3080. After the show, you can find all our podcasts at tedhart.com. Just click on radio links. Don't forget to dial 347-324-3080. Now, welcome the host of the Nonprofit Coach, Ted Hart.
And welcome here to the Nonprofit Coach. We've got a full show for you today. This is your host, Ted Hart. It is Tuesday, May 8th. We've got lots going on Page One News, and then we've got a terrific all-star here for our Page Two experts. For those of you who are familiar with the show and those of you who are new, we always start here on the Nonprofit Coach with Page One News. I'm coming to you live today from the national headquarters of the Charities Aid Foundation of America. You can find us online at cafamerica.org, that's cafamerica.org. First up here in the Page One News, you can follow along over at tedhart.com. Just click on radio, and you'll find over in the radio links today several links to very important reports that we have covered here on the Nonprofit Coach, but I want to draw your attention to those. The first up over in the radio links is the 2012 Nonprofit Social Networking Benchmark Report. Very important report. You can download a copy of that report that's going to cover such things as social communities continuing to grow, the ROI of Facebook, common fundraising tactics on Facebook, and top factors for nonprofit success in social media. You know, while we're talking about Facebook, I do want to draw your attention. This is not in the radio links yet, but was tweeted out to you today for those of you who are following us over on Twitter. That's the Twitter tag at Ted Hart. You can follow over on Twitter. But we did just send out to you a judge in Virginia has ruled that the Facebook like button is not protected under the First Amendment. This is an important ruling, particularly for nonprofits, to understand that social integration of Facebook has changed the dynamics of society in many, many ways, refining what a friend is to privacy issues, its impact on social skills, and almost everything in between. Well, in this particular case, there was a sheriff who was running for re-election. He did not like the fact that several of the folks on his staff he had found had liked his opponent's Facebook page, and so he fired them. The claim from the folks who were fired is that was their First Amendment right to like anything that they would like on Facebook. The judge did not agree, so the like button is not protected under First Amendment rights, and I think that's important for all of us to follow this. We'll be adding that to the radio link so that you'll be able to find that directly, but if you follow us at Ted Hart, you'll be able to grab that link right now, right over at Twitter. Next up here on Page One News is to draw your attention to the 2012 Convio Online Marketing Nonprofit Benchmark Study. We've covered that here on the Nonprofit Coach. I want to draw your attention as we're doing a review of these top reports that are available for here in the nonprofit sector. Next up here on page one, you'll find over in the radio links the 2011 Donor-Centric Internet and Multi-Channel Giving Benchmark Report. This comes from Blackbaud. You don't want to miss this opportunity to make sure that you understand some of the key findings that it has been increasingly common for new donors to make their first gift online. Why and how can that be substantiated? In aggregate, online acquired donors have much higher cumulative value over the long term than traditional mail-acquired donors, so much more that you can learn over in the 2011 Donor-Centric Internet and Multi-Channel Giving Report. That brings me to our first guest here on the Nonprofit Coach Page One News today. I want to draw your attention to the fine work that we noted last week on the Nonprofit Coach. The Seattle Foundation had their big event out in Seattle called Give Big, hugely successful. Here direct from the Seattle Foundation here on the Nonprofit Coach, Mary Grace is here to tell us, how did everything go, Mary, with this year's Give Big?
Oh, I think Give Big was a great success this year. We doubled the amount of funds raised from last year. It was 3.6 to 7.4 million this year.
Yeah, let me just
doubled.
Stop you right there. That's absolutely amazing. Wonderful work being done. The Give Big raised $7.4 million. And this is online contributions supporting charities in the Seattle area.
Correct.
What do you attribute that kind of success to?
We attribute the success to two factors this year. The first is that this was the second year of doing Give Big. Last year we introduced the idea, and many of the nonprofits were new to this online giving. They were new to social media, and so they were more tentative, I think, in approaching this opportunity. When they saw the success we had in 2011, they decided to go full force into 2012 with their communications, their outreach, their creativity, and really the energy they put into making it a success.
Well, this is fantastic for just a second year. Now, you had a good amount of local business support for this as well. What did the local businesses do to help you with the success?
Well, the key to the success of Give Big is what we call the stretch pool, which provides the incentive for people to give that day. We have a stretch pool of $500,000, which was used to incent people to give that day, and the nonprofits would receive a prorated share of that stretch pool based on how much they raised that day. For example, if the total Give Big donations were to your organization were 3% on Give Big Day, then you would get 3% of the stretch pool.
Well, and you got this really interesting, sounds very fun. What about the Willy Wonka golden ticket?
Oh, yeah, that provides a lot of fun, and it was really interesting to see how the nonprofits really promoted that, almost more than they promoted the stretch itself. But every hour we would randomly select one donation that had been made during that last hour, and that organization would receive a additional $1,000.
So is this sort of a social media online version of telethons?
You know, I think that it is in many respects. I think what makes this event work is really the Seattle Foundation's role is to provide this infrastructure, the platform for the nonprofits to do what they do best, which is rally their supporters, tell their story, and get people excited about their cause. So we do that by providing the day, the stretch pool, some of the advertising and public relations support for it. But what makes it work are the 1,400 nonprofits who seize this opportunity and make it fun and exciting and engaging for their supporters.
Well, what a terrific service that you are bringing to the Seattle area, not just the dollars that are raised and the importance that that brings, but to involve, I think it was over 38,000 donations that were made. That's really quite a high number of involved people.
Yeah, and as I said, that was double what we did last year. And many of those 38,000 donations, many of those are multiple donations made by the same donor. So what we see is people who really sit down and decide maybe to do all their giving for the year on that day, or people who plan plan their giving around it. Another one of the things that we found is that a good share of the donations made on GiveBig are to organizations that people haven't given to before.
So this really draws attention to important charities that might not have big staffs, might not have the ability to do promotions themselves, but with the platform that you provide and the voice that you bring to the Give Big Day, you're able to really help smaller nonprofits as well.
Right, at a relatively low cost.
That's
very
true.
Low cost.
Well, that's got to be impressive to all the donors. It's certainly impressive to everyone here at the Nonprofit Coach. Mary Grace from the Seattle Foundation, thank you so much for joining us here on the Nonprofit Coach and sharing the wonderful news about the great work being done out in Seattle with the annual Give Big program.
Great. Thank you, Ted.
You bet. Back here on page one news, we want to draw your attention over to the Conveo report, The Mobile Frontier, Successful Strategies from Text to Give and Beyond. You'll find that over in the radio links at tedhart@tedhart.com. Now, what you need to also find over in the radio links at tedhart.com is a report that is sharing some insight into Canadian giving. And, of course, we just co-hosted the Digital Leap Conference, which was hugely successful, sold out 2 weeks in advance. So we're already looking forward to Digital Leap 2013. But one of the things that we're learning from Statistics Canada, and you'll be able to read about it in the report today, is that Canadians are more charitable with money than they are with time. And it goes on and shares that the amount of money donated during last year was an average of $446 per donor. Pretty generous up there in Canada. Read all about it. This survey is based on more than 15,000 Canadians providing information. So check that out over in the radio links today. Bravo to our friends up in Canada. You'll find that at tedhart.com. Next, over in the radio links today, you'll find a terrific free guide that's available to you for download from HubSpot. Over at HubSpot, they have the 10 steps to social link building. The guide will teach you how to build inbound links using social medias, blog posts, contest directories, badges, and much more. This is not only going to help you with what's happening in your social media right now, but it's also going to help you expand your strategy by thinking about things that perhaps you've not thought of before. Next up here on the Nonprofit Coach is my opportunity to welcome a very good friend and someone who is representing the new president and CEO of CFRE. Sherlyn Hale is here with us, and she is going to bring us this month's edition of the CFRE Minute. As the immediate past chair and current board member, welcome here to the Nonprofit Coach, Sherlyn Hale.
Thanks very much, Ted. Hello from Toronto.
Well, take us away for this month's edition of the CFRE Minute.
Thank you. As many of your listeners will know, CFRE is the international credential for professional fundraisers, and we have well over 5,000 fundraisers in five or six different countries around the world. But one thing that I thought might be interesting to share with your listeners today is a few of my experiences over the last year or so through my involvement with CFRE, visiting to parts of the world where the profession of fundraising is coming into its own and really emerging, and speaking with them about certification and responding to their interest. Our profession is just exploding in many parts of the world, and our colleagues are looking at certification as a way to increase recognition of their work as professionals and build their professional communities in their areas, and really demonstrate to the public a commitment to accountability and good practice. So it's been very exciting to visit such places such as Bermuda, Japan, as well as Kenya, and very exciting things happening.
Well, this is of course very exciting for our profession and the expansion of CFRE. I was very curious to hear from you in this this month's edition of CFRE Minute that increasingly the approach that CFRE has is establishing those standards that are of global nature and not just providing exam to country-specific focus on fundraising.
We are really trying to tackle how we will approach responding to the demand for certification in parts of the world that are contacting us. Obviously, we want to do it in a credible way, and the core body of research that the framework that CFRE operates on is developed through quite a rigorous process called a job analysis. And in 2009 and 2010, we conducted an eight-country study asking fundraisers in various parts of the world what they did as fundraisers and the types of knowledge that they needed in order to do those things well. And the remarkable key message from that body of research was that as a global professional community, there's a tremendous amount of stability in what we as professionals say is core to good and effective fundraising practice. And so that's the framework that CFRE is built on, and which I think positions us as a certification body to be able to respond to other parts of the world and our colleagues there who are looking at certification as a way to build and grow their professional community. And in fact, that is the history of CFRE when it was first started in the 80s, really viewed as a way to demonstrate that fundraising was its own distinct body of knowledge and helping to build that professional community. And CFRE moves forward this year. We're going through a strategic planning process, and over the coming weeks we will be seeking input from all our current CFREs to get their input on what our future direction can and should look like. We're really looking forward to input, particularly as it relates to how we might engage with colleagues in parts of the world that where the profession is growing.
Sherilyn Hale, thank you so much for sharing with us the CFRE Minute this month, sharing with us the globalization of the certification of fundraising executives. Sherilyn, we look forward to you or another representative of CFRE being back with us next month for the June CFRE Minute. And then, of course, after that, we take our summer hiatus for July and August, and we'll be back with the CFRE Minute in September. Thank you for joining us today here live on the Nonprofit Coach.
Thanks for having me.
Next up here on the Nonprofit Coach, another very dear friend, someone that always brings us terrific news, and that is Susan McDermott. Susan McDermott is here from John Wiley and Sons, and she has the announcement of next week's AFP Wiley radio show. Who's going to be our guest next week here on the Nonprofit Coach for the AFP Wiley radio show? Welcome, Susan McDermott.
Hi, Ted, and thanks so much, as always, for having me. The guest next week is going to be Julia Walker, who is the author of A Fundraising Guide for Nonprofit Board Members, which basically offers the reader everything you need to know as a nonprofit board member to raise more money and help your organization succeed in meeting its goals. Julie Walker is a four-time Wiley and AFP Fund Development Series author, so she's got a great wealth of experience. She hails from New Orleans and has an awful lot of experience with fundraising post-Katrina, and that sort of adds some texture to her writing, and I think your listening audience is really going to enjoy the things that she has to say.
Well, she, of course, is well-known in our profession as one of the top experts and quite a prolific writer. Certainly to have that many books chosen to be part of the AFP Wiley series is extremely important. Susan, thank you for recruiting her onto the show. We certainly look forward to a very robust discussion, and what an important and timely topic you're bringing to us next week for board members and their staffs to be able to work together and raise more money.
Oh, I completely agree. I completely agree. I think all too often people are asked to join a board and see it as a prestige thing, but they don't really realize what it entails fully and how they're responsible to help raise funds for their organization. It's not just something to put on your resume.
Exactly, exactly. Well, we're going to be able to explore all of those topics next week due to your wonderful work in helping us recruit a terrific author for next week's AFP Wiley radio show here right on the Nonprofit Coach. Susan, look forward to having you back next month to share us the good news of the final AFP Wiley author before the summer hiatus. And then, of course, we'll have you back in September to share with us who that guest will be. Thank you, and have a great rest of your week.
Thanks so much, Ted. I look forward to speaking to you next. Take care.
Absolutely. Take care. Right back here on the Nonprofit Coach. We are wrapped up here on page one. So what that means is we are heading on over to page two. Pat Pasquale is the director of the Washington office of the Foundation Center and is a prior guest here on the Nonprofit Coach. We're thrilled to have her back because the last time that Pat was here on the show, she had one of the highest rated podcasts and live shows here on the Nonprofit Coach. Pat was appointed director of the Foundation Center's regional office in Washington, D.C. in April 2008. This is a return engagement for Pat, who served as the D.C.'s director from 1994 to 1999. They couldn't let her go either. She had led the center's Cleveland office for the 9 years prior to that. She also has experience as a public library administrator both in Cleveland and with the District of Columbia Public Library, where she managed special systems-wide initiatives and outreach services. As director, she oversees the office's information services, training programs, special events, and plans outreach to local, national, and international nonprofit organizations and to grant makers, as well as to Congress and the center's cooperating collections in the Mid-Atlantic region. She has a master's degree in library science from the University of Michigan and a graduate certificate in public administration from George Washington University. She's been very active in numerous philanthropic and community-based organizations, but what's most important about Pat Pasquale is that she is live here on the Nonprofit Coach right now. Pat, welcome back to the Nonprofit Coach.
Ted, thank you for inviting me and totally intimidating me with your introduction.
Well, not intimidating at all to someone that has the following that you have and the wonderful things that you do. So I'm going to start right off just because I'm so curious. My first question is, why are you so popular? What is it about grant writing that draws people to needing more information?
Well, I think, as an example, last night we did a program in Ward 8, which you know is one of the poorer sections of Washington, D.C., and we had 40 people in the audience, and the class we chose was proposal writing. I think for many there's a misperception that that is how you raise money for nonprofits. It's the main way. Many, many, many people don't realize that you have to diversify your funding sources, and they come to proposal writing because that is the thing they know about most. I mean, most people don't know about earned income or individual giving. They know proposals, they know big foundations, and that's what gravitates towards those classes. And so what we try to do with the Foundation Center is once we get them in is to show them the wide variety of other kinds of fundraising techniques that they can actually use.
And it's a wide variety of things that that you train on over at the Foundation Center. Why don't we talk a little bit about what is the Foundation Center itself? Why does it exist? How does it exist? And then talk about your office here in Washington, D.C. in specific, because I know you have a lot of very unique community-based programming here. But what is the Foundation Center?
Well, the Foundation Center, people don't realize, is over 50 years old, and it's the leading source of information about philanthropy worldwide. Through data analysis and training, we connect people who want to change the world to the resources they need to succeed. That's our elevator pitch. And we've expanded our collection of data and more emphasis on international resources and organizations in the last 2 years. It's been a slight sort of adjustment of our mission statement.
And what about the Washington office? This is one of the most active regional offices of the Foundation Center, is it not?
Well, we're the second largest after the New York office, which, of course, isn't headquartered. We get a lot of attention because people think we're the headquarters. I get lots of calls from around the world thinking that we're headquarters, but we're actually the regional office. We have a kind of an interesting history. We started off as a place where we were the Foundation Center staff who copied 990s. You remember the really old 990s on microfiche cards, et cetera.
Right, before they were available online.
We had the other National Connect collection outside of New York, but prior to that, before even microfiche, Foundation Center staff here were copying things from the Internal Revenue Service Office to publish the editions of the Foundation, the book editions of the Foundation Directory. But now we have, you know, outside of New York, we're the second largest probably epicenter of nonprofit organizations. Almost everybody has if they don't have a headquarters here, they have a government relations office. So we are a rich community of both local and international and national nonprofits. It's a major industry here in DC, in the DC area.
And so, as you said, you're often confused with being the headquarters in your regional office, but certainly a lot of the grant writing that is done has connections to government sources. And you're really focused on foundations. Do you cross over and provide training or access to information about government funding or just foundation giving?
Well, we've done, ever since the recession about 3 years ago now, we've tried to, here in this office, we've and in the other offices in San Francisco, Cleveland, Atlanta, and New York, we've been trying to put, as I said, trying to put grant seeking in its right perspective, and we've done programs on other type of grant seeking rather than just other kinds of fundraising. And one of the things we've done here in this office is we've been annually offering programs on federal, how to get money from the feds, on how to do grants.gov, how to register, how to actually try to figure a way through the catalog of federal domestic assistance, et cetera. So we've been doing that, and we had a program a couple of weeks ago. It was sold out, and just people realized that they have to spread their wings. But on the other side of the picture, we increasingly are getting calls from government agencies who are saying we're ending our grant-making programs, and we want our grantees to know how to get into the institutional private grant-seeking mode. So it's kind of an interesting relationship here.
Yeah, no, it really is, and really puts a stress and strain on those private resources. So let's talk a little bit about the private resources, which is a focus. This is corporate foundations and private foundations?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And what's the distinction between the two? Are there specific skills that nonprofit organizations need to have related to each?
Well, yes, and I think more. I heard someone yesterday who, Mr. Kiplinger from Kiplinger Magazine, spoke yesterday at a Booz Allen Hamilton talk, and he talked about the fact that more and more corporate giving is tied to their bottom line. It's their public relations dollars, it's not philanthropic dollars. And I think that's really important for people who are getting into the fundraising mode to realize. We actually teach, we have our grant-seeking class, which really is geared towards strategies used to approach private foundations, family, independent, and some company foundations. But we also have another class on introduction to corporate giving where we stress a whole different set of techniques and skills that you need in order to get into that particular market. I was teaching our class on your board and fundraising this morning, and we were talking about how you use your board people to be gatekeepers for corporations to get you in the door to the right people. And they don't necessarily link you to philanthropic dollars, but to advertising and promotional dollars, underwriting, cause-related marketing kinds of projects.
And so what is the – I mean, that's as you heard in page one, the AFP Wiley radio show is next week, and our topic is – on this issue of board member involvement. Specifically, the topic for today, what is the role for board members to play in grant writing?
Well, I think they can play a number of roles. We go through a whole list of things in our class that we talk about, from helping to gather information about the grant-making community. You know, executive directors are really busy, and you could assign board members to scanning, like the Washington Business Journal, or signing on to local blogs, philanthropic blogs in the area to pick up clues and to know background. Your board members have to help with the fundraising plan. We talk about unless they help with the plan, they're not going to buy in and do what the plan says they have to do at the end. So you want to make sure you do that. They help with compiling lists of annual, for your annual campaign. They can help write your proposal if they have good, you know, communication skills. And one of the new things that a lot of people are talking about is they can advocate for you if you're going for federal or local dollars. They can actually testify at hearings, et cetera, for your organization.
Now, Pat, I'm going to stop you right there because isn't fundraising magic? Isn't this just a magical thing? You're saying that there are actually concrete things that board members can and should do to help advance grant writing.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of board people say one of the reasons they don't do fundraising is they don't know how. And once you show them, you know, it can become, you know, a competition. It can be fun. We talk about making it fun for your board people. Make it, you know, like winning a basketball game or winning a golf tournament. You're winning for your clients because, after all, what is fundraising about but the people you're trying to serve? And if you can win the money for them, you're doing, you know, good, better, you know, helping better the world. And what's more important than that?
And one of the things that is important to know about grant writing, particularly the sorts of things that you're talking about, is this can be truly transformational. So this is really a team sport. This isn't just we hire one of those magical grant writers and they bring in big dollars.
Exactly. I mean, part of the successful nonprofit organization who writes for proposals knows that it's not the proposal that gets you the grant. It's the organization's reputation, its staffing, et cetera. The proposal only reflects what you do. When you've got a witch of the West in there, looking in the mirror getting a nice new mirror is not going to work for you. So it's really, that's the trick with proposal writing. And to be honest, I mean, one of the things that's happening is proposal writing is changing with online forms. We have a whole new set of skills and process, I think a different process that you have to go through in order to get through the submission process.
Well, that's that really has changed, and that's been in the last few years. Are there specific techniques that you share with folks in terms of how to excel in the electronic format? Because I often think of that as being a bit more flat than perhaps a well-written, well-laid-out proposal might have been in the past, that you had more opportunities to stand out in the way you presented it, where now the information is now scannable, keywords become important, and how you fill out those electronic forms.
Well, I think you're perfectly right. I spent an hour getting my activity statement into 80 words for a proposal last week, and I'm thinking, didn't have to do that before, but, you know, it's very precise, some of these online applications, 40 words for your mission, 80 words for your activity statement. And you can't tell stories. You can't use too many statistics. You have to be very strategic, very brief. it's a more, you know, disciplined, it calls for more discipline because you've really got to distill. But on the other hand, you still need all the information, your work papers, your timelines, your statements of needs and objectives. You still have to have that because, in truth, you're not submitting one proposal anymore frequently. I know I do. I have four different versions. I have a one-page, two-page, an eight-page, and a five-page version, and you've got to sort of switch. So, yeah, I think you have to be disciplined and flexible in terms of what you're putting into your proposals, depending on the length that the funder requires.
Now that sounds to me like some very specific advice that you're giving folks in terms of these different versions of your grants, that you need to be prepared to tell your story in one page, two page, five page, 10 page. Tell me how recent is that in the evolution of grant writing? And then as you answer that from the nonprofit's perspective, can you give me some insight into, is this leading to more successful grant writing from the funder side, or is this just reducing paper?
Well, I think in terms of how what you have to do, proposals are basically reflections of work plans. So you have to do that. And thank goodness for word processing, because now you can take things and slim them down and pump them up depending on the need. So I think it's basically it's an exercise you have to go through, and why some want 5 and some want 8 and some want 10 and some only want 2. It depends on, you know, some funders are doing the two-step process with a letter of intent, letter of inquiry, and we're seeing more of that in the last couple of years where they want the letter of inquiry. They do that, and then, you know, you come back and you have to submit a full proposal. Then we have
and the letter of inquiry almost becomes more important because that's your pitch piece.
That's right. That's
right. And so what advice do you give in getting through that phase? Because once you're invited on, your odds of getting funded are much better. But it's getting through that first wave that is now maybe the most difficult hurdle.
Right. And I think that, again, it's discipline. You have to have the big picture and then distill it. This is where you get a really good writer and someone who can really sort of get in. You only got one page or maybe two to pitch your story. And it's harder. It's always harder to write short than it is to write long pieces. And focusing and making sure you're covering all the points that the funder asks for. And sometimes there are a lot of issues that they ask you to cover in a letter of intent. You've only got like two pages to get through, but trying to really distill, think, analyze, be strategic, and get it on those two pages, and have it really well written so that you get your point across.
So it's the strategy of the big picture. This isn't. This is sounding to me like this is a lot less of general funding and much more project-based with outcomes.
Oh, yes. Well, you know that. You and I both know that outcomes are the magic word. Everybody, funders want outcomes, not outputs. And how do you prove what you're doing? And it's okay. It's not. They don't want you to just do things. You want to prove that what you've done is success. How do you show success is really important at all levels.
We're going to take a little bit of a station break. And when we come back, I'm wondering if you can help our listeners learn what is grant space. And
good.
We will be right back. I want to draw your attention to the next several shows coming up here on The Nonprofit Coach. As you just heard from Susan McDermott, we're very pleased to bring to you next week the AFP Wiley radio show, and extremely pleased to have Julia Ingram Walker as our guest next week. The following show is our monthly partnership with the Green Nonprofits Organization, and we will be bringing to you the Green Show. Amy Frankel, who is the director and regional representative of the UN Environment Program Regional Office of North America, will be our guest on right here on the Nonprofit Coach on May 22nd. There's no show the week of May 29th. are the show that would regularly be scheduled due to the Memorial Day holiday in the United States. So that's a great day to mark your calendar to catch up on podcasts, of which there are approaching 100 podcasts of The Nonprofit Coach. We'll be right back on the June 5th show. The June 5th show also is not going to be taking place because we're going to be down at the AFP Techno Conference, and we will be providing you with more information on how you can participate in the AFP Techno Conference in Orlando. We'll be wrapping up the last three shows of The Nonprofit Coach before our planned summer hiatus. Rob Mitchell will be with us on June 12th. Providing us with the latest information from Atlas of Giving. We will then have our June Green Show on June 19th. And then wrapping up here on The Nonprofit Coach before we head off to the summer hiatus is going to be June 26th, just like Pat Pasquale, who's our guest today, another one of the top-rated presenters here on The Nonprofit Coach, is Penelope Burke. She's going to be bringing the latest in her Cygnus donor research right here on The Nonprofit Coach, and send us off in great fashion for the summer hiatus. We're going to be heading right back to Pat Pasquale, director of the Washington Office of the Foundation Center. Pat, we've got a lot coming up here on the show the next few weeks, and as I've shared with people several times, the last time that you were here on The Nonprofit Coach, you were one of the most popular live shows and podcasts that we had ever had. One of the things that you offer over at the Foundation Center is something called Grant Space. What is that?
Well, this is an exciting second, I think it's the second website. We have several now. About a year ago, a little bit over a year ago, we launched grantspace.org, and it's a service of the Foundation Center, and it's a website just for grant seekers. We have our classic page, foundationcenter.org, which has everything on it, and people often said when they went there they got lost. There was just too much information. So GrantSpace was a redesign and an expansion of the services that we offer for grant seekers. It's divided into groups. There's a section on if you're researching for arts organizations, educations, etc. And then you can go and see frequently asked questions there. You can see webinars. You can join forums. We have sample documents in those sections. But my favorite is the skills section. We use this all the time. You can go to skills, and it lists all the major skills in fundraising, introduction to corporate giving, board development, fundraising planning, et cetera. And, again, you can get multimedia resources, podcasts, recorded webinars, frequently asked questions, statistics, sample documents, et cetera. And so it's a very, very popular tool for people. And it can be used around the world, which is amazing because, it's you know, you can look at a webinar at 3 o'clock in Tokyo if you want, and it's not tied to coming to a training program in the United States.
So this is available directly at grantspace.org, and folks can follow you on Twitter as well for the offerings over at GrantSpace, and this is an additional service of the Foundation Center.
Yeah, we have each Foundation Center field office has a Twitter account. I forget how many we're up to. We're about seven or eight Twitter accounts. We all have blogs, and we all have Facebook pages. So I was interested in all the new studies about social media. They're extremely, when we have classes here in Washington, they're overflowing. We have a class coming up on LinkedIn, and it will sell out in like, you know, 2 weeks after we post it on our page with people. The enormous interest and hunger for really good information amongst the nonprofit sector is like unquenchable.
It is always very, very popular. I'm going to be presenting tomorrow as part of the AFP webinar series, my latest webinar audio conference on social media and online fundraising. And these things are always sell out and are very popular. So anyone who's interested in that can go to AFP.com. net.org. Click on professional development. You'll be able to register for that webinar tomorrow. But you're absolutely right. It's a hot topic. But are foundations using social media, or is this not quite gotten into the foundation world yet?
Oh, it has. The center did a study back in September of 2010, and it showed that about one-third of foundation CEOs were using Facebook and blogs at that point, and only 6% were using Twitter. That was September of 2010. If you go on to another foundation center website called glasspockets.org, you can see list of foundations who are using all the different types of delicious, all the variety of social media and online tools that disseminate and storify, et cetera-fy. All those things are now listed by Foundation on glasspockets.org. And also when you go into the Foundation directory online, there is another category is what social media tools are foundations using. Our experience is that it's more, they do a lot more disseminating of information than they were a couple years ago, and more people are using Facebook and Twitter. And I think the Seattle Foundation example you just had on is very common. We had in D.C., the Community Foundation for the National Capital Region did give to the Max Day last November, which was very similar, where everybody had to give through social media, there were trainings, et cetera. So I think funders are using it, and they're also, I think, very nicely teaching their grantees how to use it as well.
Well, the Glass Pockets is a terrific site in drawing attention to the kinds of work that is being done in social media and the kinds of services that are being provided by various organizations. What is most prevalent or maybe the most successful way for nonprofits to social media-wise be in contact with foundations?
Well, I think it's partially is having a site or having some place for a funder to look. We have a lot of international groups that come through here, and one of the things that, you know, funders automatically do now is they expect you to have some sort of social media presence because they want to check you out. And I think for funders, it's a non-intrusive way of actually checking out nonprofits to see how you're doing. So you want to have some kind of social media presence. We've had a lot of speakers here, and one of the things they say, and I think it's really important, is you don't have to have everything. Have one that's really good.
Yeah, so and don't spread really yourself too thin. If you're a small organization, you really want to do a very good job with whatever it is that you do.
Right. Pick one and, you know, give it the best. If you've got more people, you can do it, but have a really good one rather than a bunch of mediocre ports.
Now, here at the Charities Aid Foundation of America, of which I'm the new CEO, the expertise that we have built over the last 20 years is in the arena of international giving, vetting charities, and providing millions of dollars of financial support to charities around the world. What are you seeing in the international grant-making arena?
Well, it's a very interesting topic for the Foundation Center, and as I mentioned, our mission has been expanded to really be more active in that area. And so we came out with a product about 2 years ago, is Philanthropy Insights. And this is a really exciting people. It was originally geared for foundations, but the nonprofit world has sort of embraced it wildly when they find out that this is for the first time. You can go on to a website and actually see funders outside the United States and get some basic information on them. Philanthropy Insights is a separate sort of subscription from Foundation Directory Online, but it's also available at most of our cooperating collections, of which we have now over 460 in the United States, where you can go out and check to see if there are, you know, what foundations exist in Europe and Africa and China, et cetera. It's nowhere near a complete list, but it is a beginning, and it's like the first time we've started putting this type of information on our websites and in our products.
And that's primarily potential funders outside of the United States who might fund within the U.S.?
Yes.
Okay. Pat, we're going to take just a very quick break for a reminder here. And when we come back, I was wondering if you would be so kind as to share your top few tips on actually getting funded. And we'll be right back.
Remember, our podcasts and archives are always available 24 hours a day at tedhart.com. Click on radio links. If you're listening live today, the phone lines are open. Call in and ask a question by dialing 347-324-3080. Now, back to the Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart.
And Pat, we're back. So how do charities that are listening today, how do they actually get funded?
Well, first of all, you have to have a good mission and do a good job. You have to have passion, and you have to really be strategic about how you're doing good and making sure you're getting the most bang for your buck. I think planning and research are essential. You have to keep asking yourself, why am I doing this, why am I approaching this funder, et cetera, so that you can get, again, the best results for your limited resources. And I think thirdly is building up a board and volunteers to support you in this very tough fundraising environment.
And how I hear what you keep saying is be focused, have your information, and be flexible. So how does an organization get funding for general purposes, or is that just not possible? Be realistic. That's not where the funding is going to come from.
Well, I think you have to be realistic that it may not come from that resource. You know the statistics about individual giving, and you know the Giving USA pie chart with earned income. And then there's the whole I find fascinating is the individual giving on social media. So I think you have to – foundation giving is usually project support, and it's limited for a number of years. And so you have to have a diversified funding streams to keep yourself up, and for general operating support, you should be looking at individuals and earned income.
And that really is part of your overall strategy as well, is to not just view foundations as quick money, as easy money, but as a part of an overall strategy, because isn't it the case that to get foundation funding, you really need to have those individual advocates and those individual donors. They're going to look for broad-based community support as opposed to just being the first funder.
Right. I mean, the whole there's now sections and proposals that ask is, you know, talk about the sustainability of your organization. You know, what are you doing now? What are you doing in the future? What if you don't raise the money this year, et cetera? What's your plan B? But sustainability questions and proposal application guidelines are, you know, now a new feature that never existed before. It used to be called future funding. Now it's sustainability.
And so if that's part of your strategy, what is the chicken and the egg? Is it individual giving first, and then you can look to corporations or foundations? Because a lot of organizations really have not perfected understanding individual giving.
Yeah, I think, I mean, most of the small organizations, we have lots of little ones who come through our organization. They're existing on, you know, gifts from family and friends, et cetera, and they want to make a jump to foundation funding. But when you talk to foundations, they're going to say you need to sort of, like, get a little bit more organized in that individual giving. And then we help you with projects and, you know, expansion, et cetera. But for general operating support, you have to look, you know, you have to look elsewhere, and as individuals historically have been the way that, you know, many, many small organizations exist, surely on volunteers and individual giving before they make the leap to institutional giving. Because there's so many demands when you go to foundations that, you know, are you ready to handle reports and evaluation, et cetera?
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because, you know, what a lot of folks are hoping is that this is the big check that's going to save the day. But what you're saying is this is really part of a broader strategy. There's a lot of reporting. Know what you're getting in for before you start really seeking that funding.
Correct. And I think not only the fundraising part is really important, but making sure that your organization in that early stage stays legal. There's so many pitfalls for nonprofit organizations that, you know, in terms of their nonprofit status, that you can, you know, not filing your 990s, not doing your biannual reports, et cetera, et cetera. You've got to have all that. You've got to stay legal, you know, in order to get institutional.
And that's
any
all part of the pre-planning. We do have an email question from Mike, and I guess it's a simple question. We've been talking about so much about strategy today, but Mike is asking, how do I find a foundation that can fund me?
Well, that's a good one for me. The Foundation Center has the Foundation Directory Online database, which has about 90,000 foundations in it and grants. And you can actually access that. It's a product that many large and medium-sized organizations buy and some small. But it's also available at our 460-plus corporate and collections throughout the United States. And if you go to grantsbase.org and there's a button that says Find Us, you can put in your zip code, and it'll direct you to the nearest cooperating collection, and then you can go in and talk to the person. They'll help you learn how to navigate the database because it's databases. There are 9 databases, but you're going to focus probably on 3, and the person there will give you some training on how to
Pat, is it free if you go to a collection, but it's
yes.
a paid service if you get it at your desktop?
Correct, yes. And basically, you want to know, you're going to be searching by your subject area, your geographic area, and the type of support. And it is for nonprofit organizations primarily. There are some grants to individuals, but basically foundations make grants to organizations with their 501c3s or government agencies.
And, Mike, I hope that answers your question. And I'm sorry, I did mean to recognize that that's Mike from San Antonio who had written in that question. Pat, it's always amazing to me how fast these shows go and how much time or how much progress we're able to make. How can people reach you? How can they reach the Washington office or the Foundation Center for the services that you provide?
Okay, well, my email is pep@foundationcenter.org. And the website for the Foundation Center's D.C. office is www.foundationcenter.org/Washington. And we also, you can check us out on Twitter. And we also have a blog. It's twitter.com/FCWashington. And we also have a blog that you can follow us on, dcblog.foundationcenter.org.
And all that information is going to be available at foundationcenter.org/Washington?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, terrific. Now, Pat, just quickly, you mentioned some of your educational programs. What's coming up in the D.C. area or at other collections that people should know about?
Well, two exciting things outside of D.C. Cleveland and San Francisco are celebrating their 35th anniversary as regional offices of the Foundation Center. So they've got all kinds of special programs, so do check out their programs all during this year. We're in the middle of Funding for International Programs Month here in D.C. We have a program on funding for programs around Africa coming next week. We have Global Giving is coming to do a program here. And then we have a fun program on called Working Abroad, the Realities. And we have people who worked abroad talking about what it's really like for all these people who want to go and work overseas. So that's in May. And then we have a number of social media programs. We have a program on LinkedIn and on the cloud and a whole host of programs during the summer as part of our TechSense program, which helps people with social media. So
a lot
coming
up, and people can sign up for dates right
yes.
at your website.
Correct.
Pat Pasquale, the director of the Washington Office of the Foundation Center, thank you so much for being our guest here on the Nonprofit Coach. No doubt another top-rated performance today here on the Nonprofit Coach. We'll be right back next week here at 12 noon Eastern, right back here on the Nonprofit Coach with the AFP Wiley, a very special show next week on board members and how they can help you with fundraising. Take care, Pat. Thanks for being my guest today.
Well, thank you for asking me, Ted, and we're going to have you come to Washington soon.
Well, my office is in Alexandria, so it won't take me long to get there. Just let me know when you need me. Take care, everybody.
Right.
We'll see you next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.